Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I think we're recording. Yeah, I think we're recording. 318 with Dale, motherfucking Comstock. The American Badass Chronicles, Volume 3. Going through his book, American Badass, which will be stickied in the top comment and link in the description. And, dude, I was saying this yesterday to my buddy. I was like, man, doing podcasts with you and or Tedi is like fishing with dynamite. You guys go out, everyone watches it. The average view time is up. All the comments are up. The likes are up. The shares are up. And it's just slowly dawning on me. I'm like, why am I even having anyone else on the podcast? This is where all my gold is. But
you've got some more good guys coming on board, man. Gary O'Neill, American Warrior, Jim Smokey West. These are two badasses, man. Yeah. And we talked about that last week, you know, in the last podcast. And these guys were my, you know, I had six mentors, as I mentioned, you know, my father, my grandfather, my uncle. My military mentor was Gary O'Neill. Mm-hmm. And then Jim West was my martial arts trainer, instructor, mentor for a long time. Still a good friend of mine. And then lastly, I mentioned David Fabricius. He's the he's also a world-class coach, entrepreneur, and things like that. I learned a lot about business from this guy. So, but Gary and Jim Ryder up there, man, they really are. They literally are two badasses that you don't ever want to get in a fight with. Even at their age now, they will freaking hand you your ass, man. Pretty amazing guys. So, they got some great stories, dude. Great story. In fact, it'd be awesome if you can get them on at the same time tell some of their stories. Oh my God, man! I mean, holy Jesus! Not the guys you want to meet in a fight for sure.
Yeah. I've wanted to link up. I've wanted to link up other guests whose like paths have crossed, and it's always difficult. But like one I don't know if I could get him to do it, but one I've wanted to do was, obviously you were in Operation Acid Gambit, right? You're the door breacher at Modelo Prison to get CIA agent Kurt Muse. But obviously y'all's ride is 160th SOAR, and I've had on Mike Durant, 160th SOAR, and he was in Operation Acid Gambit. Granted, he flew the Blackhawks and you guys took like the Little Birds, so
right.
But yeah,
we had a couple Blackhawks in the formation command and control.
Yeah.
The C3 birds. So
I just thought that would be cool. Like 30 years later, you get a couple guys from the same operation. I always thought that would be I tried to do it with the Apollo moonwalkers. I was like, oh, I got one, I'm gonna get another guy that's walked on the moon. And their agents were just like, no. And I was like, okay. It's like, fuck.
Really?
Yeah I was like, fuck. I mean, dude, these guys do like $100,000 keynote speaks, and I'm like,
really?
Yeah,
I mean, they walked on the moon. Yeah, so what? I can do the moonwalk.
So what? I can do the moonwalk. Dale Comstock, Sunday, January 17th, 10:06 a.m. Eastern.
You walked on the moon, so what, dude? You know, goddamn it. You know where I've walked? Man, I've walked some crazy places, you know?
Dale's
so,
like, I can clear a room in under a second. I don't give a fuck about the moon, man. I can take down three.
I did the long walk for Delta Selection, man. There ain't too many guys that was able to do that. I can tell you that.
Yeah, Jesus Christ in heaven.
That's a hell of a one. But yeah, so everybody's listening out there. We're kind of shooting the shit, but you know, I'm not going to go through who am I. If you don't know, I'll just Google it or whatever. But
Previous episodes we did American Badass, Volume 1, Volume 2. This is Volume 3. So just go back to the last Sunday and the Sunday before. Sorry, go on.
I'm actually calling you from Bali. I'm living in Bali. I have a home in Florida also, but you know, I maintain that, as I mentioned before, for my daughter. She's 11 years old, so when I go back, she and I have a home together. My home, for all intents and purposes, is right here in Bali. And I have a business here that's kind of in the final throes. Hopefully I can get us, you know, do some CPR and get it to resuscitate. but as COVID's killing everything, man. But there's other opportunities here, so I'm still kicking. But so I'm calling you from Bali. What a cool place, right? I live here. It's paradise, literally. And but it's got its issues too with this whole virus bullshit and the social distancing and mask. You have to wear a mask in the car. You know, they've really lost their mind here. But you just kind of put up with it. You just do what you got to do, man. You get caught. You're like, oh yeah, mask. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah. Put it on and drive off, take it back off. You know, it's just stupid stuff. You know, or if you're an expat here, you know, they know you got money, so they'll, you know, hey, you got to, you know, pay the fine. And you usually give the guy like $7, you know, and that's a lot of money for them. And you're good to go. And if you're an Indonesian, you can't pay, you know, they'll make you get off and do push-ups or something on your motorbike.
really?
Some weird shit. Yeah, just weird stuff, man. I can go on with the weirdness, but some of it's just crazy, man, the corruption and stuff like that. But not here to really talk about that. So anyways, calling from Bali, other side of the world. It's 11 p.m. Sunday night, and I'm 13 hours ahead of Eastern Standard Time, which is cool. But so what I was going to do is continue on with American Badass and going through the next chapters. The next one being autogenic conditioning, the mind game. Talk a little bit about that. And why did I include that in the book? Well, actually, the reason I included American Badass is because people ask me all the time, man, Comstock, how the hell did you do all these things? You know, what is it that got you through this stuff, right? And I can tell you it's not willpower, man. It's imagination. Yeah, I just said that, imagination. In fact, Emil Kuh, he's the founder of autogenic conditioning, one of the forefathers, you know, one of the first guys to really buy into the autogenic conditioning game. And, you know, he'll say it, and he said it before, you know, it's not about willpower. Mm-hmm. You know, success is based on imagination, not willpower, as you know, right? We had this conversation last week, and, you know, when you first talked to me, you know, a year ago, and you learned about autogenic conditioning and what it meant, and you started applying some of these principles, things, it created some realities for you that you didn't think was possible, and all of a sudden, wow.
For everyone listening, sorry to interrupt, Dale, but no, that is something I have to tell is last March, so learning about that, and I've been meditating since 2008, but last March, I remember reading Dale's book, and he was talking about autogenic, and I won't spoil it, but went into where, in short, you don't tell yourself what your goal is, you choose your goal, but then you tell yourself you already have it. And again, if anyone else tells me this, I'd be like, that's great, like, pass me the bong. What are you smoking? But when there's something like you, I'm like, there's clearly, you know, you're a no bullshit guy. You're in Delta. Okay, let's put it to work. So one thing I started doing is like, okay, you know, a year ago, March or January last year. So March last year, 2020, 29 at the time, still living at home. But I was like, living at home, working at a liquor store. And I was like, I want this podcast to work. I was like, what do I want? Like, what would be enough to move out, to pay for my own health insurance, auto insurance and everything? And I was like, I need to make anywhere from like 75 to 100K. And I was like, that seems impossible because I'm making like $200 a week at a liquor store. But in your book, you go, don't look, George S. Patton, don't tell people how to do a goal. Tell them what goal you want and let them surprise you with their ingenuity. So I just every day meditating, I'd get into a deep state. And when I was at the deepest state, I would tell myself, I'm making 75,000 a year. I'm making 75 to 100. Now I'm going to. I make 75,000 to 100,000 a year doing this podcast. Here we are a year later, and the number's somewhere in between there. But that's, I'll leave it at that. But that's insane for me. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, no. And so the reason I included in this book is because it really is the reason I was able to succeed at so many things in life and continue to succeed at them because I'm getting even better and better at it. I'm going to get a better understanding of it, all the intricacies of it. And it's amazing. So when people go, Comstock, how the hell did you do all these things? My first time they asked me that question years ago, I thought, did what? I thought I was doing what everybody else was doing, right? I thought I was just keeping up with the Jones, all the other guys, you know, especially in the unit. And then I started to look at it a little closer and go, maybe I did do a lot, you know? And then I thought, well, as I started to analyze, it's like, well, how was I able to do so much, right? And for example, I give you one example, man, towards the end of my career, about three quarters of the way through, actually, I was in third Special Forces Group, and I was a team sergeant on an A-team, and I was married with three kids. I had a part-time business. I'm a full-time Green Beret. I was a professional boxer and a full-time college student, literally a full-time college student. I went to night school, logged in a lot of hours, and, you know, and that seems like, so some people, I was like, man, it's a lot of shit to do, you know, to be a Green Beret and a professional boxer. Oh, not just a professional boxer, but studying martial arts three, four nights a week, training 2 to 3 hours a night, you know, raising a family, taking care of my wife and all the things I had to do, you know, it's, you know, for me, it just seemed like, you know, that's just normal. Probably everybody does that. And now I look back, it's like, nah, it's probably not normal. And not everybody does that, but everybody could do that. And the reason they can't do that is because they have limiting thoughts, right? So I was just, I'm just a high achiever. And, you know, once I set my mind on something and I want it, I imagine it, I was like, man, I can taste it, I can feel it, you know, then there's nothing stopping me. So I'm going to kind of go through this autogenic condition piece of it real quick, because it's kind of the, to me, it's in a lot of ways, it's what laid the basis for my success, right? I can tell you, had I not understood this or realized what was going on, my life would probably be very different. And I will also tell you, most people, 99.99% of people out there have no idea what this is or how it works or that it's a thing. In fact, they'll roll their eyes when you talk about it, like, ah, you know, it's some psychobabble hocus pocus stuff, but, you know, right. But, it's real.
Yeah.
And so, so you said something a minute ago that I wanted to, it basically spurred a thought, and I just want to throw it out there real quick. So, I do leadership coaching, not just leadership, performance coaching, right? I call it optimal performance coaching. And I talk about a lot of things. I talk about autogenic conditioning. It's really central to my coaching program. I talk about physical fitness, but not just physical fitness, but what actually happens to your body, the nutritional side of it. You know, I'm a naturopathic doctor, so I made it, you know, I studied, you know, natural health and alternative medicine. So, I apply those principles and everything I've learned into my trainings, because you can't be an optimal thinker. You can't be successful if your body's, you know, a wreck, right? And so you're not going to get to the objective if you got flat tires on the car. So you got to make sure that the vessel is running at 100% plus, right? Because why? There's another element to this that I won't get into it, but it has to do with frequency and energy, right? And your body is like a battery. And if this battery is like, you know, on its last charge, you're not going nowhere. The third element is the ether, right? Which is tied into the autogenic condition. So I talk about mindset, leadership, and then the ether, which is the autogenic conditioning piece of it. It's also known, well, not known as, but I call it spinal tuning, right? Mm-hmm. So there's these three phases of this thing. So going back to the mindset, when we talk about, I talk about mindset, I talk about leadership. And so you said something about General Patton, right? He said, don't tell the guys how to do it, just tell them what to do and let them figure it out. And you know what? My dad, the first leadership lesson I ever got was from my father when I was in the Army, or when he was in the Army. And I was probably, you know, like, I don't know, 8 years old. I still remember we were in Germany, stationed in Germany. And my dad was a great soldier, man. And he would come home from work, and it didn't matter what time it was. And the first thing he always did, man, it was spit shine his boots. Not just polish them with a brush, but spit shine them every night. I learned how to spit shine boots from my dad because I started doing it for him, right? You know, lighting the shoe polish, you know, melting it, you know, and spitting on a rag, you know, and it just, you know. But anyways, every night he did that. And I remember one night he said, he asked me, you know, a question. He goes, son, he goes, if you're, you know, in his case, he was a platoon sergeant. He goes, if you're a platoon sergeant, and imagine that you had a fence that was 10 feet high, you know, and maybe 20 feet square, had barbed wire on it, you know, there's no gates on it, you know, you couldn't climb under it, you know, you couldn't crawl under it, and you had a platoon formation, and you needed your platoon to form up on the inside of this fence. He goes, how would you get your platoon in there? Right. And I thought about it, like, well, you know, no helicopter. No, that won't fit. You know, parachute. No, that won't work. You know, I'm thinking all this stuff and I'm like, I don't know. right? And he goes, simple. He goes, you call your platoon attention, you tell them to fall out and fall in on the other side of that fence, right? Basically, what he's saying is you can let them figure it out, yeah. right? And I thought, wow, that's genius, right? So that was my first leadership lesson in life, right, from a soldier, my father. So I brought that up. I wanted to bring that up because yeah. I think that's kind of – I think it's key, man. So
yeah.
anybody that's in the military out there or in a leadership position, okay, whether you're in a civilian corporation, whatever, right, if you're leading people – and there's a difference between leading and managing, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about a leader, man. If you're leading, think about that for a minute, man. That's how you grow – that's how you grow people. That's how you grow your team. That's how you grow your company. And that's how you achieve success. So with all that said, I'm going to roll into the autogenic conditioning piece. All right. So this is actually how this happened. This is how I stumbled upon it. And again, remember, this has a basis to the rest of my life. And there'll be another story when I go through Delta operator training course where this actually saved my ass.
Yeah.
It kept me from getting canned. And it's been the basis for all my success. Okay. I've owned 4 companies now. I've sold 3 of them and I'm just growing. And I'm able to do all these things, be a professional athlete. Everything I've got in life is because I learned this secret, if you will, about mindset and autogenic conditioning. So here goes the story. So this is what happened to me. So growing up, I lived in Germany quite a lot in the American, concerns and housing areas because my father was in the army. And the big pastime there was intramural sports, right? Kids, basketball, football, baseball. That was it. Mm-hmm. And that was, everybody lived for that. All the parents, that was what Saturday and Sunday to go out and watch the games. During the week to watch the kids, practice because there's nothing else to do. And so this was a big deal. And I was a jock. I was, as a kid, I liked sports. I wasn't very good at it. In fact, I sucked for a lot of reasons. I didn't have a lot of confidence. I was small. I was a runt. I was kind of timid. I was shy. I was the runt of the litter, right? Even though it's just me and my sister, I guess I was the runt of the two, but I was a runt, right? But I really wanted to be like, the rest of the boys, man. I just, I wanted to do all this stuff. I just didn't have the confidence. And I was about 14 years old. And in my particular neighborhood called Pattonville, which was in Stuttgart, Germany, we had 2 baseball teams just in my community alone, right? The Pattonville All-Stars and the Pattonville Royals, a.k.a. the Bad News Bears, if you ever watched that movie, right? Yeah. And we were the Bad News Bears. And why were we the Bad News Bears? Because...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There was one coach who's been there for a while, right? So he knew who all the good players were, all the good kids were. So when it came time to picking teams, he got all the good guys. And my coach was the new guy in town, and he didn't know. And he just, he picked the leftovers, which was guys like me, which was, like, really bad.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening, so the teams were selected, and, I played left field. Sometimes I was left out. I wasn't very good. And that's why I put me in left field, because I couldn't do a lot of damage. Yeah. And I couldn't help the team a lot either. But, I was out there and I wore a uniform and never got any grass stains or anything, and I never had to wash it because it just stood around in all day. And one thing I had, man, I could throw a baseball. I had a pretty good arm. Just had a good arm, right? I couldn't catch for shit. But if I got my hands around that ball, I could throw it, right? Yeah. And so what happened was, on one particular day, I think it was Saturday or Friday, we had a game against the All-Stars, right? The Royals versus the All-Stars, the best of the best of the best against the Bad News Bears, right? this was going to be a shutout, and it was. So we had the game, and I remember our catcher got taken out, right? We had one catcher, he's pretty good, but guy was sliding home base, kneed him in the groin, And that was it. End of season for this guy. He was out, right? So now we're minus the best catcher, the only catcher we really had on the team. So we lost the game. The next day we had practice. And let me back up just a little bit more. I was playing always left field. This particular day, my coach said, I need you to play third base. Now, I'd never played the infield, right? And I'm like, oh, shit, you know? And I could never say no, right? I'm the guy that's like, yes, sir, you know, roger that, you know? Put me in, coach. And I'm thinking, holy shit, you know? And I had no confidence to play third. I never played it before. Yeah. Never played the infield. I was a left field guy, right? And so I knew and we were going to play these guys. And I thought, holy smacks, you know? All this stuff started coming to my head. What if, you know? Guy hits a line drive, and it comes right at my face, and, you know, and I had no confidence in catching the ball. Like, what if I try to catch it, and I miss, and it hits me in the face, you know, or what if this happened, or what if that happens, right? Nothing but negative thoughts. That's all I could come up with was negative thoughts, right? So, you know, it's negative energy, and I attract negative energy. So what happens? All those things happen, right? In fact, this one guy, I remember he was a big dude. And he was really good. And he was a really cool dude, right? You always have the cool dudes, you know, when you're a teenager. And this guy cracks the ball. It's a line drive to third base. And I remember all the time slowed down, man. And I could see this missile coming at me. and I remember in my mind going, okay, Dale, do you attempt to catch it and miss and get hit in the face because it's really going to hurt? Or do you kind of try to like catch it, pretend like you're going to catch it and kind of duck out of the way and let it go over you and pretend like you just missed, you know? And, you know, I'm processing all this information in like a split second. Time to slow down.
Yeah.
And I opted for the latter. Like, you know, I kind of half-heartedly reached up for it and kind of ducked and let it go over my head. And you know, and when I did that, man, I was rebuked by all the parents, man. They were like brutal. I'm 14 years old and they just freaking mauled me from the stand. In fact, they got out of the stands and walked over to the little box next to third base and was standing there like chewing my ass. Right? I'm like, you know, come on, you know, yeah. You know, like, I'm sorry, you know. And, you know, and of course, my confidence was like, now it's really gone, right? And so it was one error after another, right? And everybody's like, come on, coach, get him out of here, you know. And I'm like, holy shit, you know, you would think we're playing for the world championship, you know, and millions of dollars were at stake. So I remember when it was all over, man, you know, catcher got taken out. I went into the dugout and I waited till everybody cleared the baseball field. Everybody was gone before I came out. And I looked out there like, okay, nobody's out there, you know, and I went home with my tail between my legs, you know, and I never gave up. So the next day we had practice and, I'll be damned. My coach says, Comstock, I want you to play catcher. And I thought, you're fuck with me, right? Because you saw what happened at third base, right? Nothing. And if I can't play third base, what makes you think I'm going to play catcher, right? And it wasn't even up for debate. He's like, you're playing catcher. And so I thought, okay, you know, this guy wants to just really fuck me up. He's having fun embarrassing me. I didn't know what was going on or why it was happening, right? So not a quitter. I said, okay, I'll roger that. Mm-hmm. Put me in, coach, right? So I had about 30 minutes of practice before it got too dark to you know, do any more. And, you know, I'm getting all this input. I'm, like, really nervous. Like, you know, good Lord, you know, I'm going to be catcher, you know, guys swinging the ball and shit's going to happen really fast. And all the actions are going to be at home plate, you know, and everybody's giving me, you know, instructions and advice. Hey, man, this, you know, do this when this happens. Do that when this happens. And it was sensory overload, right? And I'm not doing good, right? The balls are coming. I'm kind of like missing and it's hit me in the chest and the face. I'm like, oh, shit, you know, but we're too deep. We're too far into this to make any adjustments. We got another game tomorrow in the morning with the All-Stars again. And so it's too late, man. Yeah. You're it, right? And like, God damn it, man. So I remember walking home that night in the dark. And I'm thinking, what did I just sign up for, right? And so I started thinking, well, what if I just don't show up tomorrow? They got to replace me, right? Yeah. And I'll pretend like I'm sick, right? So I'm thinking all this shit, right? And then I'm thinking, nah, can't do that, man. You know, I'm a team player, counting on me, and I'm not a quitter, right? And I thought about it, and like, I just couldn't bring myself to do it. So I go home, and I'm in full, like, panic mode, man. And it was about 7 p.m. in the evening. This was Germany, and it got dark pretty early in springtime. And I go to bed, and I remember I had a little boom box because it was really popular back then. Mine was an Iowa, AIWA, mm-hmm. had little speakers on it, you know, got it for Christmas, and had my cassette in there with my jams and my little headphones. And I laid in bed all night long listening to the same song called Daz, Daz, Disco Daz by the Barcades, right? And I've never forgot that song. I love that song, right? And so I laid in bed for hours, like hours and hours and hours. And all I did was in my mind visualize playing catcher. I saw myself catching every ball. And if I couldn't catch it, I saw myself stopping it with the chest plate. Goddamn, I stopped it with my face. That's what I took. But there's no way it's going to get behind me.
Yeah.
I saw myself making double plays, triple plays. I saw myself throwing dudes out. I just saw myself not making any errors. And I, in my mind, I visualized every contingency, every possibility, and I saw myself acting on it to the point where I could feel the ball in my hand. I could feel the thread. I could mm-hmm. feel the impact of my catcher's mm-hmm. mitt. I could feel everything like it's actually happening, right? The sunny day, the mm-hmm. breeze, the crowd behind me talking, blah, 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 you know, get that guy out of there. You know, I could hear it all, right?
Yeah.
And so I did this for hours and hours and hours. And at some point, I finally fell asleep. And I woke up, it was about 7 a.m. in the morning, and got up, got dressed, got my gear, and I walked to the baseball field. And I never forget the morning, too. It was a spring morning, sunny, a lot of dew on the grass, you know, clover leaves and stuff. My shoes were getting wet as I'm walking. And I remember just walking, and I had this sense of calm about me. I was very sedate, very at ease, wasn't panicked, wasn't nervous, wasn't scared, wasn't overexcited. I was just like, very level, right? Yeah. And it was a weird feeling, but I do remember it. And I show up at the baseball field, and I'm still very kind of stoic. And I'm mission focused, though. I'm like, I'm focused, mm-hmm. but I'm real cool. Mm-hmm. And my coach was like, Comstock, jack up, get out there, start practicing with the pitcher, right? And I'm like, sir, I'm putting it on, you know? And all of a sudden, then it happens, right? Here comes the parents. They see me putting the catcher's gear on. And they're like, what the hell, dude? Right, like a bunch of hyenas, man. They're all over me.
Yeah.
And, they're not even being discreet about it, man. They're just openly call me a shithead, you know? Yeah, exactly, you know? And I'm like, damn, man, you know? And my coach taught me a second leadership example of my life, right? He stood between me and them. He's like, you know what? He goes, I'm the coach. He goes, I decide who plays, when they play, where they play, how long they play. He goes, that's what I do. He goes, if you guys want to coach, be my guest. Otherwise, go back to the bleachers, sit down, and enjoy the game. And leave my players alone. Right? And I'm like, damn. And they were like, they all stormed off, right? And but I remember watching him stand up to these parents, right? And I'm like, wow.
Fuck yeah.
Very cool, right? You got my back. And so I'm practicing and game starts, and then make a really long story short, everything I imagined in my that night visualized happened. Mm-hmm. I made double plays and triple plays by myself. I was a one-man baseball team. Not one ball got past me ever. Never got past me. I mean, there were dirt balls. I'd stop on my legs, my balls, if that's what it took, my chest, my face. But they were nothing's getting behind me. I was catching pop flies, double playing, hitting dudes out on second base, third base. I was a one man baseball team. Zero errors, man. Zero errors. And when the game was over, I was awarded the game ball as the most valuable player of the game. It was amazing, right? It's like, I was the MVP. I was the one man. I didn't need the rest of the team. I got this, man.
Yeah.
You guys just go sit down.
Yeah, I had it, man.
I mean, that's what it was like, right? And I played catcher from that point on, thereon, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I just smoked it, right? And so I walked away from that day thinking, wow, how did that happen? I went from zero to hero. I went from a guy with no confidence yesterday, total failure, you know, total dumbass playing. I mean, just a total fuck up. And today I'm like the freaking most valuable player. And from there on, I'll kick some ass as a catcher. And so what happened? I thought about it, and I didn't forget the lesson. The lesson was I focused.
Yeah.
And as I didn't just focus, man, I felt it in the here and now, like it's actually happening, man. You know, actually happening. And so that was a very important lesson for me in my teenage years. And I didn't know it had a name. I didn't know it was a thing. Nobody ever talked about that. It was like, you know, and if I brought it, someone like they rolled their eyes like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They had all kinds of other reasons for it, you know?
Yeah.
And it didn't make, none of those reasons made any sense, right? It had nothing to do with determination or willpower. Had everything to do with what did I imagine? What did I believe and dream and feel, right? Like it was actually happening.
I want to inject my own story because clearly I have an ego.
I have to make this about me.
But, you know, it's back before I knew it had a name, but I still meditated every day. Obviously, I've talked about it all the time. I graduated the University of Georgia in 2013. I was pre-med, I was a straight-A student. But I studied for the MCAT, the Medical College Admissions Test, for 9 months. And like that, you know, you want to get into like the 50th or 60th percentile. And I'd been studying for 9 months, but I was like, I couldn't do it for 9 months. I just couldn't get past like 50th or 60th percentile, which is enough to maybe get in. But I was like, I want to blow this away. And I remember what I finally started doing in the last week, so studying from September 2012 to May 2013. I remember the last week, I finally, it was kind of like what you did. I didn't know there was a name for it. But what I did is I just started sitting down. I was like, I know the material. Like, I'm not going to learn it anymore. I know the material. And I would just meditate, and I would really just focus on it. I'd be like, I know what it's like. It comes up on the computer. I know there's a timer for each section. You got the writing comprehension. You got biology. You got physical sciences. I know there's 52 questions per section. I know I have 52 minutes. And then I cut it out, and I had everything. And I was like, you know the material. The only thing that's going to change now is mindset. And I would just go through in my head. I'll be like, you know what it's like to get an A on a test. Like, I know that feeling of getting an A on an organic chemistry test. And I'd be like, take that and just apply it to the MCAT. Stop building it up as this monster. And I was like, what is it going to be? I'm going to get my test scores back. I'm going to look at it on my phone. I'm going to freak out. I'm going to call my mom. You know, my dad's going to be proud. My mom's going to be crying. You know, my other pre-med friends, they're going to be like, fuck yeah, you killed it. I'm going to go get drunk as fuck that night. Like, I'm going to get so drunk I throw up on myself. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to go do it. And I remember the morning of the MCAT, I still remember it, May 30th, 2013. I remember the morning of, waking up and going to take it, but I still remember that morning, like you're saying, I can't remember another morning in my life or a day in my life. I mean, it must be that peace you have when you're going to like death row, because I was just, it's what you're talking about, just peace, not excited, not, I was just like, I got this. I was like, it wasn't a matter of if, I was like, it's just, it's over, I've got it. Scored in the 95th.6 percentile. Right?
Yeah.
So scored in the top 4th percentile in the nation. But I didn't know there was a name for it. This was 7 years ago. But to what you're saying, is it worked? Is it actually worked? And it still sticks out in my mind. And I know it worked because it wasn't just, here's my story. It's like, no, there I was interviewing at med schools with a bunch of other people who all went to Yale, Harvard. And I'm just sitting there like, I did something. And I don't know what it was, but it worked. But sorry, back to you.
No, I'm going to talk about this more later on where, you know, when I went through Delta selection, I made it to the unit. I made it through the operator training course. I almost failed out of the course. And I'm going to talk about what happened and how I was able to literally, in a span of 3 days, go from the worst student in the class to the top student in the class. And so, and again, it had everything to do with, I had to go home, go to bed, and focus, right? And so that was the game changer. And so, and I remember what happened is when I played baseball, and I was in big trouble, and I thought, man, okay, what am I gonna do? I know what I can do. I'll do the same thing I did when I played baseball. I'll do the same thing for this. And it worked, and it's been working ever since then. So that will come in the subsequent chapters as we go in the other podcast.
Sure.
So moving forward, so that was a very important life lesson for me. Now remember, you know, my father was in the Army for 20 years. He grew up poor, no white privilege there. I mean, literally grew up really poor, man, out in the desert, on the east side of the Sierra Nevada Mountains in a place called Bishop, California. You know, he had an 11th grade education and joined the Army. And so he joined the Army, ended up in Germany, and then he met my mom. My mom had a 9th grade education. They got married. My mom had me when she was 17. He was 20. And then, and here I am, right? So what happened was, moving forward, nobody on either side of my family, right, had a college education because they were all, you know, they were just poor.
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't afford it, right? Dad loved grade education. My mom, 9th grade education. Yeah. And they did what they had to do. In fact, my mom, her only job skill was she was a seamstress. She learned that in school, how to sew, right? That was it. So my father really wanted me to be the first college graduate on both sides of the family, right? That was really his intent. That's all he thought about. It's like, man, I want my son to be the first. I want to start elevating the family, right? Yeah. And so I knew that. But the reality is I sucked as a student, man, for a lot of reasons. I went to 4 different high schools in 4 years, right? In fact, I started 1 year like three months late because my dad, you know, we were rotating and ETSing, and we'd ETS in the middle of school year from Germany to the United States, and I'd go to a new school, and I could never catch up. And it's not because I'm necessarily stupid. It was just because I could not catch up and assimilate fast enough. So I was just barely hanging on, you know, with, you know, C's, D's, and F's, man. If I got a B, I did really good. But, you know, I was averaging D's and C's. I was terrible, man. And I had no confidence, man, no confidence. And part of it is just the situation created this, you know, this feeling for me, because I just, you know, everything was a fail. Every time I started school, I started late, different schools, and trying to assimilate, make friends, and, you know, and anyway, so what happened was, I missed the Army, right, the Army life, because I'm now living in the civilian world. In fact, we had moved to, my dad retired, and we moved from Fort Huachuca, Arizona, up to the Bay Area, San Francisco, right? He got a job up there with a company that would radio electronics, because he was, you know, his background was in communications. So now, like, we're really like fish out of water, right? I'm living in this world that I'm living with kids that are not like, you know, the kids I grew up with in the military. Not the same type of mindset, you know. You know, when you grow up in a military culture, you know, your fathers and your mothers are in the military, that mindset is passed on to the kids, right? The discipline, the respect, all those things, dude. You know, when you know, 5 o'clock reveille, you know, when that was playing, you know, everybody stood out there with their hands on their heart, you know, along with the soldiers saluting, man. That's the culture, man. That's military culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, and people out there will scoff at that. Like, you know, and I said, to hell with you, man. You know what? The hell with them, right? So so I miss that culture, man. I miss that, you know, that world, man, where there was that culture, that camaraderie, that friendship, that discipline, you know, that honor, all those things that made us proud, man, proud. And so I couldn't wait to go to the Army, right? And I didn't want to tell my dad. And I just thought about it all the time. Like, man, I want to go back. I want to go back to that life, you know. And then we moved to Sacramento, and one day, I'm looking in TV Guide, right? I open it up, and they have an advertisement in the middle, and it was an airborne ranger coming out of a jungle. I'll never forget. I can see it today, right? He's wearing a green patrol cap. He was wearing OG-107s. He had a rappel rope around his chest. He had a Car 15. You know, he had camouflage on his face, and he's just coming out. He had this badass look to him coming out of the jungle, right? I thought, that is it, man. That's what I want to do. And so then, just serendipitously, I get a call from a recruiter, Army recruiter, you know? And I'm thinking about it, like, yeah, let's go down there, right? And so I went down there, and I'll never forget, in my book, I call him Staff Sergeant Dodson, right? Save his name. Little redhead Irish dude, Staff Sergeant. Freaking guy could talk. He was funnier than shit, man. Just a wild man. And I show up in his office, sit down at the desk, and he just starts talking about, you know, things like, you know, communications, you know, and you know, electronics. We didn't have computers back then, you know, and it sounds like a long time ago, right? This was like 1980, right? And so, and he's, you know, talking about, you know, everything I was not interested in. And I'm just kind of like looking at this crap on the table. And I go, Sergeant Dodson, what about Airborne Rangers? And he kind of got, eyes got big, kind of smiling, like, shit. And he wiped the whole desk clean, pulls out one little thing about the Airborne Rangers. He goes, bam. And I'm like, that's it. That's what I want to do. And he's like, well, sign right here. We're good, right? So sign me up, right? And he's like, hey, if you can bring two more guys in, you know, on this delayed entry program, which was a year out right before we graduated high school, he goes, you know, we'll promote you to E2 right away. You go in an Army already in E2 instead of E1, and you get a $3,000 bonus. Holy shit. So I recruited my two best friends, right? I talked them into it, right? And my two best friends to this day are still my best friends ever, man. They're my brothers.
Fuck yeah.
We went to high school together. One of them's a black guy named Kenny, and the other guy's a Mexican named Joe. And we were the best friends. To this day, we're still the best friends, right? So the three of us, the three Musketeers, we signed up together and we went in the late entry program. Now I had a problem, though. I had to tell my dad what I did, right? And I did. And when I told him, he was not happy. He was actually sad, right? He wasn't mad. He was just, I could tell he was very disappointed.
Yeah.
And I saw it in his eyes, like, oh, shit, you know, I really screwed this up. I thought he was going to be proud of me because I wanted to be a soldier too, right? And he's like, son, you know, he used to tell me you wouldn't do good in the Army. You don't like getting up early. You're lazy, blah, blah, blah. You know, giving all those reasons why it sucked to be a soldier. And here I go, right? And so when I saw how bad I disappointed him and the fact that I thought you were going to go to college, you know, I was like, look, Dad, I said, I'm going to get my college degree. I promise I'll get a college degree. Let me join the Army. I want to be like you. I want to go back to that, but I'll get a college degree. You know, I'll do it, right? And that was my promise to him. So the year went by, and, you know, I went in and, you know, and actually all three of us went in. So we're supposed to go to Ranger School. Well, that somehow didn't happen. Like, oh, by the way, you know, no, we can't send to Ranger School. There's been a change, you know, for, you know, slots. Just go to the 82nd Airborne Division. When you report to your company, tell the sergeant major you want to go to Ranger School. And you just sign, you know, take care of it real quick and you can go to Ranger School, no problem. It's that easy, right? Yeah, right. Bullshit. So, you know, like, oh, okay. You know, we so, yeah, that never materialized. You go, hey, gotta go to Ranger School. Like, fuck you. There's like 1,000 guys in front of you. You know, you're not going nowhere. It's like, shit, okay. I keep digging that foxholes deeper, yeah. Right? And like, oh, yes, sir.
I used to watch you as a kid play baseball. You suck. You're like, fuck.
So, yeah, so anyways, ended up in 82nd. I was an infantry company, 2nd Battalion, 325th Airborne Infantry. And then we had a really good company. Actually, we had a great platoon. Our platoon won the what they call the annual RTEP every year, which was 15,000 paratroopers. Not all of them are infantry, but most good. You had three brigades of infantry. And they would test us, right, in the field, test our maneuverability, you know, and, you know, all our combat skills, you know. And then they would designate, you know, the platoon, one platoon as the best platoon in 82nd. It just happened to be my platoon, right? Which is pretty cool. And so we were the, you know, the best of the best of the freaking dumbest, right? I mean, when I say that, I mean, that's all we did is dig foxholes and shoot things, right? And yeah. Shot at. That was our job. And so we got designated as, at the time, General Lindsay, he was the airborne commander, said, I want to start the LERP program again, right? Just like in Vietnam. And so he took my platoon because it was the best of the best of the best. And we became the 82nd Airborne Division, Long Range Reconnaissance Platoon. And we were now attached to the 313th Military Intelligence Battalion. And so after my first year in the infantry, I spent the next 3 years in the LERPs. And then it was time to ETS, right? So I'm coming up on the age of 22. I'm married to my first wife. And I have many of those, but it was my first one. And we had my baby girl, right? Which is crazy because she's 36 years old now. And so, so I'm at this crossroad. I'm like, what do I do? Do I stay in or do I get out? Because, you know, this digging foxhole stuff's just not that exciting. And, yeah. You know, and carrying a rucksack around all the time. And I just felt like I wasn't being challenged and I wanted to do more. And I just didn't see where that was going to happen. And so, it actually kind of made me want to get out of the Army because it had a negative impact on me. So I remember thinking, you know, maybe I should get out, go back to the civilian world, you know, and do something cool there, you know. And then now backing up just a little bit, probably about a year earlier, we went to Britain, to England, and we my platoon trained with the 22 SAS, their little range reconnaissance patrols, right out in Hereford, England. And they showed us the selection, their video of their selection process, which is where the Delta Force selection process basically derived from. And I remember, you know, they go, okay, you know, we had like, you know, had like 50 candidates started, you know, and as the course goes along, you know, candidates, you know, they don't make it and they put little red X's on their faces. And then at the end, there was like two of them left, like, damn, you know, anyway, so I thought, man, that's pretty awesome, you know. And they showed them, you know, humping through the, we call the Brecon Beacons, you know, the mountains and stuff. It's cold weather, you know, and wow, that's pretty cool. But I didn't think that was going to, you know, okay, that's written though. So, but then about a few months later, we got back. Now, I remember my platoon, we were out in the field and on Fort Bragg, out in the middle of nowhere, out in the woods, way out in the woods. And it was, the sun was just coming up and it was called stand to, right? So what you do is right before at dawn, before the sun's up and the first light comes up, you know, we call it before morning nautical light, twilight, right? And so, anyways, as it starts getting light, you have to be up, stand too, right? Because if the enemy's going to attack, that's a good time to attack, right? While you're still sleeping and shit, you know, they can kind of see what's going on and they get the jump on it, right? And so this goes way, way back to, you know, the Civil War and probably beyond that, right? It's just military strategy, you know? And so it was doctrine. And so we're laying there that morning, I remember, in a little perimeter. And, you know, you're freezing, you're soaking wet, you know, and you know, standing to, you know, for, you know, an imaginary, you know, adversary that's not out there, but, you know, pretend like he is out there. And I'm laying there with the guy next to me, you know, pointing my gun in the woods, you know, and can't wait to go back to sleep or eat my sea ration. And all of a sudden I see this dude running across the perimeter in civilian clothes, right? He's wearing blue jeans, jungle boots. He had on like a, like a flannel shirt, right? And he had a rucksack on his back. He had long black hair, big bushy mustache. And we're in the middle of nowhere. We're way out on Bragg, man. And I see this guy running through the freaking woods, man. And I look at the guy and I said, what the hell, man? Who is that guy? You know, who is this, man? Right? Yeah. It was like spotting like spotting Bigfoot, right? Yeah. And so he goes, you don't know who that is? I'm like, no. And it was almost like he was like, he didn't want to talk too loud because if he spoke too loud, something bad would happen to us, right? Like, you know who that is? But no, he goes, that's one of those Delta Force guys. Goes, Delta Force? Who the hell is Delta Force? What are you talking about, right? And so he proceeded to tell me a little bit about it. Really? I didn't know that existed. And then I remembered, that kind of sounds like the SAS guys, right? Mm-hmm. And then I became more intrigued by that. Much more intrigued. Now, I always told my father that I wanted to go to Special Forces being Green Beret, right? I said that was really my objective, but it didn't look like I was going to get out of the 82nd. You know, it just didn't look like it was going to happen. And then I, right before I ETS, I remember I called my mom. I said, Mom, my time is almost up, you know, and, you know, I was wondering, you know, I got my wife and my little baby girl. I was thinking, you know, maybe we could come home and live with you for a little while until we get on my feet, you know, get a job, you know, and move on, right? And I remember my mom, man, her answer was no, not no, but hell no. And I'm like, whoa, I wasn't expecting. I thought, come home. Yeah, yeah. No, don't you dare come back here. Don't you be bringing some woman and a kid too.
Yeah.
And holy shit, right? So now I realize I ain't got nowhere to go. But stay here. Well, I just happened to get a recruitment letter from Delta Force saying that I was eligible to come out and apply, right? To try out, right? And so everybody thinks because they get the letter, oh, Delta Force wanted me. They sent me a letter, but I didn't, you know, had better things to do. Right? It's all bullshit, right? Yeah. What they did was they screen all the records in the military, right? And they have a minimal requirement that you have to meet, right? And it's a lot. And it's minimal age, no UCGM, UCMJ, you know, action against you ever, certain GT scores. There's all kinds of stuff they look at, right? And if you meet the threshold, they send you a letter, say, hey, you're welcome to come out and put in an application, right? And the application process is basically background checks, actually a psych evaluation, physical fitness tests, a bunch of other stuff. So I'm thinking, well, damn, if I got to stay in the Army, man, I might as well go for the gusto, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going to go to the top, right? And be the best of the best of the best. So I decided, okay, I'm going to re-enlist and I'm going to go to Delta. That's what I'm going to do. Knowing that my chances of making it was like zero, right? Why? Because I was young. The average age was 33 at the time. I'm 22, just going on 23. 22 is a minimum age, right? I just made the cutoff. I had the minimum rank, minimum cutoff, minimum everything. And the odds of me making it was almost zero, right? Because I didn't have the experience. Like all the other guys who were going to go there, these other guys were going to be, they've been around for a while. They're Rangers, Green Berets, you know? And so I decided I'm going to do it. If I'm going to listen, that's what I'm going to do. And so I went to the application process, went through all that, you know, and then lo and behold, wasn't too long after all the background checks were done, they're like, hey, well, you're eligible to come to assessment and selection, right? Like the next step, right? And so, okay, cool. So at that time, right before, I trained like a madman too. Now, what most people don't know, and most people don't make selection the first time. I didn't make it the first time, okay? I made it right up to the last damn day. And there's a reason I didn't make it. And it had to do a lot with, at the time when I went through, they had the 100-year floods in West Virginia. And the river, Cheat River, went 12 feet over its banks. Everything was underwater. Everything was lost. And basically, you know, I was swimming through selection. I wasn't walking through it no more. And the attrition rate was super high. And I made it right up to the last day, and I got pulled. Is what they call a time standard. I just couldn't swim fast enough, I guess. And I remember really being disappointed. Like, damn. And what that meant was I'm going to go back to the 82nd to the Lerps, you know, and continue to dig foxholes and shit. So I remember when I sat on the board at the exit brief with the commander, you know, he's like, attaboy, you know, you did a good job, you know, blah, 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 you know, and, you know, thanks for coming up, you know. And I was like, you got any questions? I go, yes, sir. You know, can I try it again? I'd like to try it again. He goes, yeah, you can try it again. He goes, I'm going to recommend you get to try it again because you didn't quit and, you know, you got hard. But he goes, I'm going to suggest that, you know, you give yourself a few years, go be a Green Beret, be a Ranger, you know, get some time under your belt, you know, get some miles under your boots. And then, you know, write me a letter and, you know, and I'll consider bringing you back to let you try it out again. And I remember sitting there thinking about that. And I'm like, what?
Fuck that.
Like, I'm not doing all that just to come back. I'm doing this now, right? And that's what I'm thinking back in my mind. I'm like, yeah, watch me, right? Thanks a lot. Sure. Yeah, sure. And then I leave. No, that's bullshit. I ain't doing it. So I waited till the next selection, right? A year later. And this time I knew what I was up against, right? I said, okay, this time there is no way nothing's going to stop me. No floodwaters, nothing's going to stop me this time, right? And so I trained like a freaking madman. And I did. I trained for about three, four months straight. I mean, as hard as I could, three times a day. And I got a serious training regimen that I actually offer as part of my coaching program. There's a lot of guys in SF. Or guys that want to go to SF or try out for Delta, I have a training program for them. The same one I went through that I did. I outlined it. You know, what did I do? How did I do it? You know, diet, nutrition, and it's a solid program, right? And so now I'm getting orders again. I put my paperwork in, and they approve it, right? I'm in. And so the same time I got a letter, I got orders to. PCS, basically a permanent change of station. I was supposed to leave Fort Bragg and go to Fort Polk, Louisiana and be part of a MEC unit there, right? Basically the swamps of Louisiana. And that was going to happen like 2 days after I would have come back, completed selection course, right? And I'm like, oh shit. So that meant I had to start clearing Fort Bragg, turn all my gear in. I had a house I bought. I got a rent and I'm in a little house, but I bought it. Like, damn, what am I going to do with the house? I got to sell it, rent it. I had a lot of stuff to do, like, in this much time. And that was going to really detract from everything. And so I decided, you know what? I am going to make it this time, come hell or high water. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make it, right? And I am not going to do one thing to prepare to PCS. Basically, I was going to roll the dice. If I didn't make it, I mean, I would have had to come back and jump through my ass, literally come back and report right to my next assignment without renting my house, selling my house, turning my gear, making any preparations. I would just walk by into my house, kiss my wife goodbye, and just kept on going, right?
Isn't that Alexander the Great? Alexander the Great, if you want to take the island, burn your boat.
Well, that's pretty much what happened, right? That's what I did.
Burn your boat. Yeah.
That's what I did, right? It was a huge risk. But I was like, you know what? There's no way I can fail. I wanted it so bad. I saw myself make it through the course. I saw myself being an operator. I saw myself living the lifestyle, doing those operator things, you know? I just saw it, man. Yeah. And I remember one day I was humping down the road in my neighborhood with a rucksack on, and this guy rolls by me on a bicycle. And he's got a big bushy mustache, you know, the hairdo going on. He's got the signature pager on his side, and he kind of rides back, and button hooks back around, comes back to me, and goes, "Hey, man, are you getting ready for something?" I go, "Yep." He goes, "All right, man, good luck." He knew what I was doing. I knew who he was, right? Mm-hmm. I could just tell, right? And he knew it too, right? So, and then when I saw him, I go, "I want to be like that guy, man. You know, how cool is that shit?"
Yeah.
And so I want the cool mustache too. So anyways, so I went back and it was a Hail Mary play. And I tell you what, I smoked that course. There was 110 of us that started, 6 finished, and 3 of us got selected. Jesus, I was the youngest guy ever in the year, ever. Yeah, at the time, I was the youngest guy ever at the age of 23 to make it. The other two guys that made it were in their mid-30s. So they were Rangers, Green Berets, right? Yeah. So I made it, man, and I smoked it. You know, I was always the first one done, the first one at my RV, waiting for the next guy to come in. I know I could kind of gauge how well I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did I have an advantage because I went through twice? I would argue no, because you don't get the same lanes. Everything's different. And the reality is, you still got to walk those mountains. Just because you've been there before doesn't mean you can fly over them. You still got to walk them, right?
Yeah.
And you still got to do the work. And so, and there were some moments out there, dude. I had tears in my eyes, man. I mean, really, it was very demoralizing. And Delta Selection is very different from, it's the most unique selection course in the world. Okay. People talk about, you know, Navy SEAL, wah, wah, wah. You know, I mean, Delta's force selection is an individual effort. Every candidate goes through selection. Goes through by himself. He either succeeds or fails on his own merit.
Yeah.
And actually, all the pressure that he's under, he creates for himself. It's all psychological, right? Whereas when you go through, you know, Buds or, you know, Ranger School or anything else, right, you're going through as a team and groups, you know, and you can kind of draw energy and confidence and, you know, and motivation from the other guys, you know, and you kind of gauge who are you doing with somebody else. When you're in selection, you're all by yourself. You got a day, you don't know when it's going to end. You don't know what the standard is. You have no idea how far have I got to go, when's it going to be over, how many days. Every day you just do the best you can, because those are the words that you're left with before you leave. It's like, do the best you can.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean? I mean, do the best you can.
Yeah.
Fuck, you know, the best I can is like wide open.
Yeah.
But how long can I go wide open? Do the best you can. So, you know, and he's good enough, it's not, right? So all the pressure you're under is on you create it, you're on yourself. And trust me, man, when you're under pressure like that, it's a matter of time physically when you break down and there's nothing left in the tank. It affects the psyche, and you literally see who you really are. And I can remember standing out in the woods by myself, looking at my, you know, self crying, going, "You freaking pussy, man. You know, is this what you're all about? Is this what you want to be?"
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, you know, and you reach deep, you know, and deep, man, really deep to make it through. And most guys just can't reach deep enough. That's why 3 of us got selected out of 110. That happens twice a year, by the way. And they had selection courses where one guy made it. Again, you just had a lot to do with the mindset piece of it, seeing the outcome. But anyways, I made it, right? And I dodged the 4 poke bullet. And I thought, ooh, that was close. Thank God, man, I made it, you know, because that would have been a train wreck right there. And so anyways, you know, I made it through. And you know, and that's how I ended up in the organization, and became a life-changing event for me, you know. And so, you know, I spent almost 10 years over there. While I was there, I had an opportunity to go through the Special Force Qualification Course, become a Green Beret. I did my time in the 82nd. So really for 20 years in the Army, I was either kicking indoors or humping a rucksack. And with the exception of about a year and a half, where I was the Assistant Officer CO for 3rd Special Forces Group. So, you know, we're looking at the time here. We're almost an hour into it. So I'm going to
say, yeah, we can just jump in on Sunday, man. I don't care.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of recap it right here.
Sure.
And then and when I'm looking at my notes here, it's actually my book, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a thing towards the end here, right? When I joined the Army, at the time, the Army motto was be all that you can be, right? Be all that you can be. That was the Army motto. And I actually live by that motto to this day. I still say that to myself. When I look at something that I want to do or I'm interested in, I tell myself, be all that you can be. Do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That gets me going, man. Be all that you can be. Are you being all that you can be? Right? And that's really important. And then later on in the Army, you know, they changed it to the Army of One,
mm-hmm.
right? Which was, you know, the reason they changed it to Army of One, because they realized that, you know, the new generation was actually very self-centered. It's all about what's in it for me. A different psyche, right? With the new, you know, the new generation. And so they changed it to the Army of One, because you can go in the Army as one, you know, and you get to do all this one man army shit, you know, and get all this stuff, you know. And they found out that was not a good, that didn't work out too good, right? Had a different mindset. So I'm still stuck on the be all that you can be, you know, mantra. And I still think about it, you know, every day as if I want to do something or I'm interested in something, it's like, be all that you can be, do it,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
You know, you only got so much time on the clock, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, use it up, man. Be all that you can be.
Fuck yeah.
So anyways, that was kind of how I ended up in the Army. I ended up in the 82nd Airborne Division as a LRP. And then, you know, that made that transition at that 4-year mark into the Delta Force. Now going back a little bit on the time in the 82nd, you know, it was an important period and for me, because being in the infantry, you know, it was hard time. We'd go out of the field for 6 weeks. Didn't matter what time of year it was. And we went out with minimal shit, man. You didn't bring a field jacket out. You had a sweater or a field jacket liner. You put on your uniform. That was it, man. You didn't bring a sleeping bag. We literally slept in wool blankets, right? You'd hump a wool blanket to the field and a poncho. And then they came out with poncho liners, right? Which is a nylon liner, which, you know, I mean, they're actually pretty warm and they're very lightweight, but, you know, a lot lighter than a wool blanket. But that was it, man, you know. And you carried, you know, sea rations in your back, cans of food, you know, and, you know, steel pots. This was post-Vietnam era, not far behind it, you know. In fact, my platoon sergeant, I remember, was Sergeant Wilson. Sergeant Wilson was with, I believe, the 1st of the 7th. Cabin and he looks like Sergeant Barnes from Platoon, right? Mm-hmm. Looked just like him, talked like him, everything.
Yeah.
Now that I look back, right? And so he was our platoon sergeant, and he was a Vietnam vet. And this guy was hardcore, man. He'd been there, done that, you know. And I actually learned a lot of things from him. And there's some things that I actually apply today in my coaching program. Some of the things that he had taught us that were very unique. And I think it has some serious application into success and in this other space that I'm in when it comes to coaching. I'm going on my notes here. So I'm looking at a couple other things real fast. Yeah. So next week we'll talk about, we're going to talk about Operation Urgent Fury, which was my first deployment, was in Grenada, and how that's actually a funny story. And when I tell people stories, they're like, no way. I'm like, yeah, way. I literally walked around the island by myself. Yeah. I got dropped off in the middle of the night. And so, we'll pick it up from there. And then, we'll continue to march, and we'll go into, you know, start talking a little bit more about selection going through OTC.
Yeah.
And then my other experience with autogenic conditioning and OTC and how
Yosemite Sam.
The lessons I learned from that baseball game carried over, you know, 10, 12 years later. And actually, it was that lesson that allowed me to become a Delta Force operator. Had I not had that experience or that lesson early in life, I would have never made it through. And so, you know, so there's a lot more to cover. And we'll break it off right there, I think. And because it's actually midnight.
I always forget when I'm talking to you. I'm like, yeah, let's just keep going. I'm like, my day is getting started. I'm like, Dale's. It's midnight.
Actually, you know what? And to be honest with you, man, it's not even, you know, I'm on my own clock, man. And, you know, I really don't have anywhere to be in the morning. You know, but I do have things to do and I'll just, you know, organize my day. But I try to kind of keep some kind of a work schedule, day schedule.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, you know, sometimes I have to remind myself, dude, Comstock, you're your own boss, man. And for everybody that's listening out there, you know, just paying attention to this podcast. You know, if you're wondering a little bit about, you know, what am I talking about? I live in Bali, Indonesia. I've lived in, worked in, or, you know, visited over 90 countries in my lifetime. I've lived and worked in Hong Kong, Europe. And so since the time I retired out of the military, which was in 2001, we're talking 20 years ago. You know, I've always been my own boss. Mm-hmm. You remember what I said earlier in the story. You know, I was as dumb as a rock, man. I barely graduated high school. In fact, I had to take summer school classes just to make sure I had enough credits to graduate high school so I could go in the Army.
Yeah.
I was that far behind. And I wasn't gifted or anything like that. And so didn't have a lot of money. I didn't have any more money than any other, you know, guy that Master Sergeant retires, you know, out of 20 years, you know. I have a retirement check, which, you know, my ex-wife, it's half of that just for child support payments, you know. So, you know. And, you know, taxes for Uncle Sam, you know, all those lazy ass bastards who don't want to work, you know, I got to pay them too. And so here we are. Right. But, I've created my own reality and, you know, I live a life where I don't have a boss. I haven't had a boss in 20 years. I did a lot of cool stuff. And most of you know, or some of you probably know, I spent 9.5 years with OGA, doing the same stuff I did in the military. You know, as of the last 4 or 5 years, you know, I've been working as a mercenary, a real mercenary, not, you know, Blackwater contractor, but, you know, I've worked for foreign governments. It was all above board. So I've still been in the fight, so to speak, fighting against the global war on terrorism. In my 50s, I'm 57 now. And, but I live my own life. I get up when I want to get up. I go to bed when I want to go to bed. I answer to nobody. I hustle for my money. If I don't hustle fast enough, then I got problems. People aren't going to eat, you know. Yeah. I got a lot of mouths to feed. But you know what? It's nothing. There's nothing like the hustle, and there's nothing like, you know, being in charge of your own destiny, your own success, and being responsible for your own failures. And there, in that, is a lot of, you know, there's a lot of peace in that. You know, when. It's not a lot of stress for me. I never stress out. You know, if I wake up one morning and go, damn, I'm out of money this month, you know, shit. You know, I don't freak out like, oh, my God, what if I don't find any money? I always make money. I always find a way to make money. I'm always making money. I'm always spending money. I'm always losing money, right? And I'm always making more money. I'm never afraid that I can't succeed. I know I can. And it has a lot to do with that mindset we talked about earlier. And it's funny how that works. It's funny how that works. As long as I'm not going, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And as long as I don't see myself broke and in trouble, I'm okay. I have to see the money coming in. I always tell my wife, don't worry, money's coming.
Yeah.
I don't know where it's coming from. It's coming. Yeah. I know it's coming. I hear the whistle blowing. It's coming.
Yeah.
Right? And it comes. And it shows up. Hey, there it is.
Yeah.
Just like always, right? Yeah. And so I do have to work. I do have to hustle. It doesn't like just fall out of the sky. I wish it did, but it don't. You know, I have to invoke what's called the law of action.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One of the universal laws. I got to do something.
Yeah.
And so I create my reality again, right? I organize it and construct, you know, the life that I live in, you know, the times, the time management, the people around me. I organize everything in a way for success. right? And so it's a great feeling. Anybody can do it. And if you're listening to me out there, because I have a lot of coaching clients, they come to me and go, dude, I'm in a bad place, you know? I'm in a job that sucks, or I just lost my job and, you know, I don't know what to do. And the first thing I always tell them is, you know, change your way of thinking.
Yeah.
Stop thinking like that, right? Think positive, you know, and what does that mean? You know, it doesn't mean, well, you know, I'm gonna succeed. It's when I say think positive, I'm thinking about that positive imagination that you and I have talked about earlier, right?
Yeah.
See the future the way you want it. See it and feel it like you're living it right now.
Yeah.
And it will become so, right? But don't just sit around waiting for it to come to the door.
No.
Invoke the law of action, right? So yeah. That's part of my coaching program. So I guess that's kind of a plug for my coaching.
Yeah.
I'm actually partners with Joe Tedai.
Yeah.
We have a company called Tier One Performance Coaching. And, you know, Joe's a good dude. We're good partners. And, you know, there's guys out there that'll, you know, have thrown him under the bus falsely, wrongly. And I can honestly tell you that. Now, and I'm going to take a second here to explain that, because I'm sure there's people out there going, Joe Tedai. Joe and I have been downrange together, all right, slinging lead. So anybody that says he's stolen valor, it's all bullshit, okay? We know where that started, where that stems from. Joe is very, very accomplished. All the things he said he's done, he's actually done. I have verified it myself. I've seen all the documentation. And because of the organization that he and I both work for, you don't get in until you pass the polygraph, and you don't get in until you go through a very arduous background investigation. It's probably harder than any alien military background investigation. Some were like, well, it's the same thing. No, actually, it's not.
Yeah.
It's
a level above.
And he and I, he is legit. That's why we're partners, you know.
That's what I tell people is whenever anyone's like, you know, Joe, you know, I thought there was stolen valor. I thought there's like drama around that name. I always tell them this: the day after you and I did our first podcast, so March of last year, episode 50, remember you called me the next day, and one of the things you said, you're like, I want to have on my buddy Joe Tedai. I never watched TV, so I had never seen this show, so I didn't recognize the name. You were like, you may have heard that name, and I was like, no. You're like, there's like drama around that name, and I was like, okay. And I remember you said, Tom, I vouch for him. And to me, so whenever anything's ever come up, I always just say, I'm like, you know, Dale Comstock, oh yeah, I know, I love him. He's my favorite guest. I'm like, Dale vouches for him, so I take that, and I don't need any more. So I respect you through and through. So when you say, Tom, I vouch for this guy, like, I've been downrange with him, that's just my response to people. They're like, what do you think? I'm like, Dale's giving me the green light, and that's all I need. So, you know, me and all my friends, who the most we've ever done is like shooting airsoft gun. So when you're like, hey, I vouch for this guy, we've been downrange, like, I've trusted him with my life, I'm like, that's all I need. Just game over. Like, if my dad tells me, hey, I trust that guy, I'm like, my old man's not going to lie to me. The same thing with you. I'm like, Dale trusts him, and I'm like, it's done. Like, that's it. I don't need any more. So go eat a dick, you dirty communists.
Yeah, but if you look at Joe's his resume, his bios, he's very well accomplished as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And together between the two of us, you know, we feel like, you know, there's a lot we can teach people, man.
Yeah.
You know, not just about, you know, rah rah rah, you can do this. You know, look at me. It's more. I actually get into the science of it, deep into the science of it. As you know, we just talked about autogenic conditioning, and that is actually based on science.
Yeah.
In fact, Albert Einstein said the same thing, you know, success is about frequency. It's not about philosophy.
Yeah.
And I wholeheartedly believe that. So we have a program that centers on that. And we do train a lot of vets. I do it particularly, preparing them for special forces training, whatever the hell they want to do. I train a lot of cops. I train businessmen, bankers, other coaches, on and on and on. But at the end of the day, again, the message I guess I'm trying to put out there to everybody is, you know, The world is what you make it, man. And you can do whatever you want to do if you can see it and feel it. You know, it's yours, man. And what I'm doing right now, nobody invited me to come here to Bali. Actually, I was chasing my wife at the time, who was my girlfriend. I was chasing tail. That's how I ended up here. and after I showed up here, I'm like, hey, man, there might be some business opportunities here. So I did my analysis. I go, yeah, I could do something here, you know. And if you think about it, you know, here I am, American. There's not many of us here. In fact, in Indonesia, And it's a Muslim country. It's about 97% Muslim. And I show up here and go, I think I can do something here. I'll figure it out, right? So here I am. I'm in Bali. I got a security company. I got my office. I trained. I've deployed canines, right, for hotels and, you know, and other venues, you know, and I do some really cool stuff here. And,
fuck yeah,
you know, if I can do that, anybody can do that. You know, remember, I had my dad had an 11th grade education. My mom had a 9th grade education. And I was a C, D, F student.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not gifted, but I worked hard and all, you know, FYI, in the Army, I started out with telling the story about my father wanting me to go to the, college. Well, I got my bachelor's and my master's degree while in the Army, while a Green Beret and a Delta Force operator, while an infantryman, kicking indoors, carrying a rucksack. I got my master's degree and my bachelor's degree. I got my doctorate a few years later, working for OGA downrange. I earned my entire doctorate downrange in combat. Okay, if I was not putting holes in people or lifting weights or sleeping, I was studying. And I managed to pull off a doctorate in 17 months, right? So it's what you put into it, man. You know,
the American badass. Jesus Christ.
All right, anyway. Yeah.
Well, we'll leave it there, man. Well, but we'll leave it there. But, I mean, just real quick, last, like, 30 seconds. But that's what I always get back to. So when I talk to people about autogenic conditioning, and I'm like, I've been meditating my whole life. I didn't know there was a name for it. They're like, where are you getting this from? I'm not getting this from some dirty hippie girl who's never shaved her armpits. I'm like, no, this is from this guy. That's the only reason why I give it weight, is because it's, you know, if some dude who can't who sucks at everything is telling me how to throw a football, I'm like, fuck off. If Tom Brady is like, I throw a football well because every morning I put tapioca pudding on my balls, I would be like, where do I buy tapioca pudding? Because you have 9 Super Bowl appearances and 6 wins. Where, okay, I'll go buy a gallon of tapioca pudding. Everyone's like, why are you doing that? And I'm like, because he did it. So fuck off. So that's how I look at it. Not saying that you're saying put tapioca pudding on my balls, but, you know, autogenic conditioning. Also, I never in my life once thought that I would be talking to a guy from Delta Force about putting tapioca pudding on my balls. So, you know, like, life is full of surprises. Dale Comstock, hey, same time next week, 10 a.m. Eastern time on Sunday. I guess that will be the 24th. And, yeah, we'll get into the next chapter.
All right. All right,
brother. Cool, man. Stay safe. See you then. Thank you. God bless America. Bye-bye. Stay safe, everybody.
Hoorah.
Hoorah.